Well, good afternoon. We'll go ahead and get started. I know there's a lot of people still coming on us. Like, everybody's like me today, running late. But we'll go ahead and get started. And I just want to go through a couple of things real quick, some things that may be on your mind. And seems like the rhetoric, and both on the right on the left, is getting to a frenzy pace. We've been in this so-called trade concerns, I'll call it, instead of a trade war, but we've been in this for now a couple of weeks. It could all end tomorrow, in my opinion. I think there's a good shot that it could. I got to believe one or two things are going to happen. Either President Trump is going to come out any day and announce, the trade war is off, or everything's good, and everything's looking great, and we can't come to some sort of agreement, and that's going to be the end of it, or he's going to wait until the week before the election and do it, which I think would be a mistake, but nonetheless, that might be what his strategists are telling him to do. The other thing is, it could all end tomorrow. If President Xi of China picks the phone up and says, okay, we're ready to make a deal, and here's what it looks like, is that okay? And we say it's okay, and it's all over. It could literally end this afternoon just as easily and as quickly as it began. Really, most of the stress is over China. There isn't any stress over Europe. There's no stress over what's happening in the rest of the Pacific Rim. There should be, but there isn't a lot of stress over NAFTA and what is going on there between Mexico and Canada. I think that is the quickest thing, the easiest thing to resolve. The upside was, and we got a little bit of a bump in confidence when the new president of Mexico said he's ready to talk, wants to talk about trade, wants to talk about NAFTA, and that's great. I don't know if we are or not. If we are, it's behind closed doors and it's not being talked about. But certainly very important, and we'll see. But everybody is concerned about trade and concerned about China primarily. One of the things that I talk about often that I want to mention real quick is copper. Why do I talk about copper so much? Copper is probably one of the best predictors of the economy. People call it Dr. Copper because of how good it is at predicting what is going on. Now, that primarily means about China's economy. China's economy can be predicted pretty quickly through copper. Now, at its peak, which was back in early June, I believe. I don't know the date. It was sitting about $329 a pound. Now, it's not dollars, I'm sorry, but it's broken down into pound and it's cents. So $3.29, so $2.29. So per pound, copper now is down to $2.77. That's down 15% from its recent peak, and that is as of today. So it's down significantly. That's primarily due to the economy in China. Not surprising to see China stocks getting clobbered when we look at just copper alone. Not to mention, they have continued to lower the requirement for equities in their bank system, and that has devalued the yuan quite a bit as well. So all this to say is China's economy is struggling, and it is struggling big time. And these trade, the problems are not helping. From what I understand, from what I have heard, I haven't heard it reported. I don't think it's been reported. But I have, from what I know, President Xi has no desire to settle the trade war. Doesn't want to talk about it. Well, I don't know what he's going to do. The tit-for-tat stuff is over with because there's nothing left. We don't have that many goods. We don't have quite as many goods, to say the least, going to China as they have coming to here. So obviously you run out of that after a while and a half. So I don't know if that is just a rumor in Washington that he doesn't want to talk, but nonetheless, he could end it all tomorrow, and that would be huge. That would be a very good thing for the markets. Here's the thing that we've got to consider from a market perspective, not the economy perspective. From the market perspective, the markets have done very, very well. Markets have done really well. So the market's doing well in the midst of so-called trade wars. Now, that's got to tell you something about the underlying strength of the economy and the underlying some of the fundamentals of the markets. So things are doing well in spite of all the problems with trade. I don't mean to say that trade is insignificant and isn't, but as we look at the markets, it may be. And if it ends up being, we get into a full-fledged trade war, and the markets continue to be relatively muted, trading in a very tight range like they have been this week, then that's going to be a huge problem for China and a huge problem for the rest of our trading partners. So we'll see if that's what happens. I hope we don't get to that point. I hope it gets resolved. So all President Trump wants to see, I believe, at this point, it's President Xi coming in from China and saying, okay, look, this is what we're going to agree to. You're right. It hasn't been that fair. We're going to make it fairer. This is what we're going to do. And if a company comes over here and sets up a business, then they're going to own that business, not us. Just a little thing like that. We're not going to we're going to stop stealing intellectual property. We're going to stop. That's not going to happen anymore. They're not going to admit that, but they're going to, you know, be cautious about that, and they're going to make sure that, you know, that stops. I don't know how they can stop that, because that is their research and development. That is their ingenuity. That is their innovativeness. It's taking what other companies have done and maybe try to improve on a little bit, but they're masters at reverse engineering at this point. So they can continue to steal the intellectual property, but they're going to have to come out and talk about that. So all that to say is I think the market's going to stay strong, because I think the markets, the economy's going to stay strong, and I think it's going to continue to be strong. Do we need to be cautiously optimistic? Yes. I am very cautious. I said this morning on the program that I've got a whole list of stocks that are going to be stocks that are going to do very well. I put some of them on my list, you know, that are bottomed out, but there's so many of them that are economically dependent stocks. In other words, they're going to be dependent upon how well the market does, and they're already at a bottom. So if the markets do well, these stocks ought to take off and do very well. But I can't put them on my list because they are so heavily dependent upon the economy, and the economy could take a turn for the worst. They could take a turn for the worst if we see a trade war get exacerbated in some way, shape, or form. So if we see November elections go to Democrats, the House of Representatives, the majority of that now goes to Democrats, that is going to have a dramatic impact on the economy. That is going to scare me. There are positions I'm already thinking about that I will put sell orders in as a result of that. So, you know, these are the kinds of things that I'm trying to watch and trying to stay on top of. The other thing I'm watching very closely is the inflows and the outflows of both treasuries and equities. I am trying to get a handle on the money market accounts, both mutual funds and bank money market accounts, and the inflows. But what's happening is, I think that is such a moving target that a lot of the people that I draw some of that data from aren't reporting. So that's a problem. Anyway, we've got to watch that as well to get a feel for, you know, where cash is going. Of course, the other thing is insider trading and what corporations are doing. I'm looking at filings for buybacks of stocks. I look at that all the time. I have been for as long as I can remember. So that's something we watch closely. I'm watching to it with a little bit more interest than I have been in the past. So we've got to watch that, and we've got to look at that very closely and see where that's going. And based on, and I'm watching very closely after the end of this second quarter earnings season, what free cash flow begins to look like for a bunch of companies. I said on the air that you're going to get an alert about a sell on a stock. It's Kratos. You all know the stock. Many of you probably own it. It is up year to date. And, you know, that's good news. And I think it may be a good time to sell. It's up about, I don't know, I'm looking. It's up 23% year to date. So it's had a very good year this year, up 23%. I'm hoping that means that some of you are in pretty good shape and can sell it and get out from under it. So you don't have to. If you've got a very, very long time horizon and you just want to hang in there with it, I don't have a problem with that. But I just think that this may be a good time to sell. I do not like the fundamentals of the company right now and where they are. Their valuation, I would consider negative. It's got very poor valuation. In other words, it's overvalued considerably. Their financal health in general is very negative. It doesn't look good. Their free cash flow is almost non-existent. So that is certainly a problem and something that we'll continue to watch as well. But I don't like what I see right now as far as that goes. So we're not looking at very good fundamentals. And we need to be concerned about that. Their revenue stream is okay. It's good. Their revenue stream is continuing to go up. It's still not where it was 2012, 2013 levels. We now realize 2012, 2013 was kind of a bit of an anomaly, and we're probably not going to see that again. But the financial strength or weakness of this company, I would classify as very weak, very negative, and that's one of the problems that I have with it. They don't have any cash. It's going to be hard for them to grow, but we'll see. They missed out on a big contract. There's others in the pipeline. Most of their cash flow comes from government work. So I'm going to issue a sell order on it, whether you do it or not. It's totally up to you. You know, not necessarily a huge thing. Some of you may not own a whole lot of it, but I see it as a sell right now. Good company. I'm going to keep it because I think it's got great potential. It could end up back on my buy list again. But I can't imagine it ending up back on my buy list. I mean, it would have to get down to, you know, $7 and some change for me to buy it. And I don't get it on the buy list again. And even that is going to be a concern because of their weak financial position. So Kratos, KTOS is the symbol. It's an aerospace defense company primarily. It's a micro cap, might be a small cap, but it's a micro cap, I believe, and company that we're going to sell. So I'll put out an alert on it just as a reminder. Today would be a good day to sell it. It's up again today. It continues. Actually, it has gone down a little bit today. There you go. So it was up earlier. It was way up earlier. It was up 326. It's down to 1326 to 1311. So it's moving downward. But anyway, if you're profitable, I wouldn't sit on it. I would either sell the profit off, the 23%, if you've had it all year, or sell out of it altogether, which is what I would prefer. But again, it's not an absolute gotta sell, don't even think about holding it kind of stock. It's not that kind of thing. So, you know, as we look at the outlook for the economy, I feel still very optimistic. Everybody's worried about the yield curve. We're hearing a whole lot about that. I talked a little bit about it yesterday during the third hour. Somebody asked me a question. Don't remember his name. Somebody from South Carolina talked a little bit about it. So back in May, I think it was middle of May, May 15th, 16th, somewhere in that neighborhood, maybe May 17th, 18th, but somewhere around there, we saw the yield, the bond yield 10-year peak at $3.11%. So since then, it's been trading below 3. And will likely continue to do that. So I'm not so worried about the inversion of the yield because I don't think it's going to mean anything. I don't think it's going to mean what it used to mean years ago. If it means a recession, that could be, but it's going to be 12, 15 months out, and we'll have time to really get a good look at the markets and react. It seems like we have constantly been in a wait and see from a political perspective of what is going on. And it looks again like we are in this wait and see from a political perspective what is going to go on. I think the November elections are pivotal, critical to the outlook of our portfolios, to our buys, and so on. So there are some of the things that I really just wanted to bring out. I am planning on reviewing and going through the asset allocation models. I'm going to do it again. There are some changes we are going to make. So I will again send an alert out on that as to what, you know, changes that have been made and when they have been made. So there may be some allocation models, age groups that don't change at all. And I'll just point out the ones in my alert that did change, just so that you can be aware of it when you take a look at that. Okay, so I know that some folks have some questions and they do want to answer. I didn't want to take a whole lot of questions, but I am going to take some here in a few minutes. But my main concern is that you will know when I'm starting feeling a little less confident about the markets as cash positions in the asset allocation models will begin to go up and change. And so you'll get a feel for my feeling on where I believe things are going. So I just want to say, because I know somebody's going to ask me and I'm trying to avoid the question. So if you were thinking you're going to ask me something about this stock, I'm not going to comment on Zion Oil. So, yeah, I know you've got questions about it and you want to ask me. I'm just going to say, as a partner, I would expect, theoretically, that nobody owns it. So there's no reason for me to comment on it. Now, I know that's not true. I say that nobody owns it because I issued a sell on it some time ago. It has never been on my buy list since that. So theoretically, nobody should own it. I know a lot of you do, but I don't feel compelled, number one, to comment on it because it was a sell. And my discipline is that I never, ever look back. That is a personal philosophy of mine in my own investment and portfolios. And the other institutional money that I manage, I don't look back. If I sell something at 21% and it goes up 100%, I really don't care. I don't look at it. I don't worry about it. I don't stress over it and don't say, oh, I wish I should would have held it. Never look back. Same thing on the downside. I'm not going to look back. So I don't want to dwell on it because we don't own it. But I just say, if you do own it and you had a question about it, I'm not going to comment on it. There's too much going on right now. Nothing has really come out. There's been no news since the subpoena. The subpoenas were issued. What is the subpoena on? I have no clue. The SEC is under no obligations to go into any detail about that, and they won't. Generally, from what I know to be true, is when a subpoena is issued, very seldom does only one get issued. Very seldom are they looking for something and they issue a subpoena for it. That very seldom happens. There will be others coming along unless the subpoena they issued is very general and will allow them access. Yeah, I keep losing this headpiece. Access to something they didn't think of. But generally, it'll be coming out. There has been a quiet phase. I am waiting to hear from some people on the ground about the operation, if there's any operation of the rig going on. Somebody told me Sunday, somebody called me from Jerusalem on Sunday, said they saw no activity, but I'm not sure what their work schedule is. Obviously, I don't know whether Friday is a holiday or they close early on Friday before sunset for Shabbat. Obviously, they would not work on Saturday. So I'm not sure. I'm waiting for continued confirmation, but there's no activity as far as I know going on right now from what I'm being told. So that's all I'm going to say. So I just want to throw that out there so you don't ask that question and we don't spend a lot of time on it. I can't tell you. I'm not going to tell you. I told you what to do with it. I told you to sell it some time ago. So I can't tell you. And I never told you to buy it. You know, I know there's people that own it because they hear us talk about it on the radio. They run out and buy it thinking I want people to buy it. But I've never said that. So anyway. I think it's important that I note that. I don't know, again, there's no news that I know of, unless it's come out in the last 2 hours, that I have seen in reference to anything that is going on there. So we'll see where it is. Just so you know, for today, it is up. So there you go. I don't know when full disclosure will come out of what it was. And you need to understand something because it's critically important you get this. Just because a subpoena was issued for something, it means nothing. You know, people think, oh, no, it does not mean that. It could be something as simple as they missed a filing and they want to see what's going on. I mean, it doesn't mean anything. We have some general ideas of why it was issued, but it doesn't mean anything. So doesn't mean it's the end of the company or anything like that. It's not something that, we should be overly concerned about. Hopefully we'll hear some more information as time goes on here. Okay. The only other thing that I want to talk about is what is going on for a moment with some of the sectors in the markets. We have been very fortunate as partners with what has happened in the areas of technology. So if you own technologies, I over the last year and a half we've had plenty of time to own some of those. It's done well. Technology continues to be on a run. I thought it was over 2 weeks ago. It continues to go on. So it's hard to say where it's going to be. I still like the industrials. I still like the material section. There are a number of stocks that if we remain, if Republicans and conservatives remain in control in the House and in the Senate, then I would suspect there's a possibility we could see some sort of infrastructure bill that could be very positive for a number of those industrial stocks. We could also continue to see the buildup of the military, also very good for those industrial stocks and very good for some of the technology stocks. So we will watch. We'll watch it very close, and we'll see what goes on. But certainly industrials, materials. I know a lot of you own Huntsman, great company. I did a very extensive analysis on Huntsman, and frankly, right now, by all accounts, it doesn't look like their growth is going to end anytime soon. The forward momentum looks very good. I am leaning towards taking, on the industrial side, John Deere off my list. I think the prospects right now are looking better for Caterpillar than they are John Deere. So John Deere will probably be coming off and not be on my list. So we'll watch that. I know I've had both of them on there, but I'm leaning towards Caterpillar, because I think that if we make a trade deal with China, Caterpillar is going to jump in a much greater way than is Deere, and have a lasting upside momentum. I also would say that I wouldn't be surprised in the next year and a half, we see a split in Caterpillar stock. That's it. I mean, we're going to, I know some of you have some questions. I want to hope we can get some questions on something you want me to comment on in and around the economy and where things are going, and maybe ask me some questions that you believe are unanswered. I would love to hear about all of those. So, I'm going to press this Q&A thing if I can. We'll start taking some questions. If you can give me your name when you give me your question, that would be great. And we'll start going to those as soon as that is beginning to populate. So let me go to first call.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, Dan, this is Rich in Texas.
Hey, Rich.
Listen, quick information on Goodyear tire rubber. I mean, I'm taking a bath in that, but it's a hold, I understand, and I have no problem with that. But what's going to bring it back up?
It's not going to come. You know where they're getting hurt? They're getting hurt in commodities. And the outlook for product is very good right now. They're having a good, revenue. I think they're going to have a good second quarter revenue stream, sales numbers. Auto sales have been strong, both here and abroad. Eurozone just had a 5% increase in 1 month in auto sales. That's going to be very good for them. But keep in mind that when we look at Goodyear, they are the largest owner and controller, so to speak, of rubber in the world. They own the vast majority of rubber plantations around the globe. And obviously, rubber is a commodity. And that has really been taking it on the chin. And, we're hoping that the stronger dollar, we're seeing the dollar strengthening again today, is going to help that a little bit. But they have that either advantage, it depends on how you look at it, either that's an advantage for Goodyear, or it's not so good. But, you know, I think they're going to be a great – I think they're a good hold. I'm feeling real good about their second quarter. I think they're get some balance because of the currency trade with the rubber plantations. That's going to offset some of the issues with the commodities. They're way, way, way undervalued right now. I would go so far as to say they're probably extremely undervalued. And according to the valuations that I do, they are selling, I don't even know what they're selling at, $22, give or take. But I have valuation on them at $35. In other words, I'm saying they should be selling for $35. And they likely will be selling at $35 at some point in time. So they're undervalued by a significant amount of money, and I think that is going to help them to grow in the future. The outlook looks very good for them. Some of the things that I love, free cash flow is very, very good. They've had good cash flow now for three and a half years. They were negative. They went from negative cash flow in 2012, 13, and 14. They have a very positive free cash flow. Earnings are good. Everything's good. It's just a great company. So I would want to own it. I'd want to hold it right here for sure.
Awesome. Thank you, Dan, and God bless you and your family.
You're welcome. Thank you. I appreciate saying that, Rich. Let me go next here to whoever.
Dan.
Yes, sir.
This is Don in Mississippi.
Hey, Don.
Hi. Haven't talked to you in a while. I'm going to need income probably within a year or a little less. So okay. I'm transitioning a little more into the income, moving toward the income only allocation model. And I notice you have preferreds 20%, utilities 20%, and then large cap, mid cap, growth and income, energy at 5%. It seems like from what I've looked at that most of those preferreds that are available are in the utilities. Some in energy, but so how am I to, is it okay to get more than 20% in utilities if they're preferred, or how
yeah,
do I
so,
work that out?
So here's how it works, Don. Preferreds that are issued by utility companies are not utilities.
Okay.
Preferreds are always financials. They're always financials. They're never – so even though the company, the underlying company that is issuing is an energy company or utility company or whatever kind of company it is, it's irrelevant because a preferred – is a bond. It is a financial instrument. It's a debt issue. It's a financial product. So preferreds always figure in from an asset allocation model as financials, not the stock there that is the underlying stock.
Okay. So it would be okay then to have more than 20% in the what's listed as utilities on your buy list if it's a preferred.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. That's right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Very good.
And you classify that, Don, as a financial.
Okay.
You know, for you know, and you'll
yes.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Thank
Don,
you.
I hope retirement's treating you well, brother.
Well, so far so good. And,
you're probably busier than you've ever been.
Well, exactly right.
Yep, that's what I figured.
One other
that's
question, if I may.
Sure, sure.
My wife has owned Fidelity Real Estate, their real estate investment trust.
Yes.
For years, years and years. We sold off profit on it back in the spring. I think at that point we were about, it was at valued at $25,000. We sold off $10,000 profit. It's back, it's still around 15 or so right now. And I know that's not one of the things on your buy list, but what do you think about that? Should we hang on to that? Is that something we need to sell, or what's your opinion?
I think you can probably hang on to it. I mean, since you've taken so much profit out, that's one of those economy stocks. So if the economy starts to turn sour, or even if I'm saying that I'm concerned before it does turn sour, then I would sell it. Other than that, I'd keep it.
Good. Thank you, sir.
All right, Don. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, hello, Dan.
Good morning. Afternoon.
This is Taylor in Texas. I wanted to see if I could get your thoughts on oil prices in terms of trading ranges and short-term and your long-term opinion.
Okay. So, in my, you know, the way I think oil, I said in January that I thought oil was going to hover, you know, in the 60s, high 60s, mid high 60s, and that's where it was going to be at the end of the year. That's probably not accurate. I think it is probably going to be higher than that, unfortunately. I think we're going to see an initial drop in the short term. I think we could see it even drop as low as the low 60s for oil in the short term. I wouldn't be surprised, though, to see by the end of the year in the low 70s, and that's where it's going to finish. I think that, you know, regardless of what they're trying to do with supply and, it's, you know, trying to really pick up supply, and which is going to keep prices low in the short term, I think in the long term they're going to have to release some of that supply. One or two things are going to happen in the long term. Either they're going to start to, and I'm talking mostly about Brent crude oil, either OPEC is going to start tightening up the supply again, because they really, not only Saudi Arabia, who is the main player in OPEC, but all of the OPEC nations, they need $80 a barrel oil. Now, they're not going to get that this year unless there's some sort of major geopolitical event that's an interruption to the flow of oil. They're not going to get 80, but they've got to get as close to that as they can. Saudi Arabia's budget was built on $100 a barrel. Russia's built on $120 a barrel. We're not going to see that, but I think long term we're going to see higher oil prices. Now remember, oil, one thing about oil, overnight could change dramatically based on geopolitical event, and that's something that we always have to be aware of. But I think the short term it's going to be pretty good. I think gas prices are going to be relatively stable. Now the other thing that could change that scenario is that we have an incredible demand. The demand on gasoline I can't even make any sense out of, because I can't get it to compute in my brain. Now, I'm not saying that I'm just a little bit off on my population numbers and confidence numbers and all those kinds of things, but the usage of gasoline in the month of June was ridiculous. It was up 21% in the month. That is an incredible demand. And so I'm chalking it up for exports. So I think that I think exports of distilled products are far greater than has been reported or we even realize. So that's got to be what it is, because the demand is just too crazy. If it is actual at the pump demand, then we've got a problem. If the economy does slow, man, it's really going to be a bigger problem than I thought, but I don't really think that is. So the other thing is demand. So if we start to see industrial demand here in the United States with oil, which we should see in a growing economy, and we will see in a growing economy, that's going to be really strong. That is going to tax our inventories and our supply. And I suspect we'll see oil prices go up a little more than I think. But I don't see that demand possibly picking up until now, the very end of the year or the beginning of next, because corporate America manufacturing productivity has tapped on the brakes a little bit over this trade. And, you know, that's I was hoping that wouldn't happen, but it looks like they have. It doesn't mean it's going to take them forever to ramp back up again and build that enthusiasm, but it sure is going to slow it down a little bit. So, I mean, that's what I'm thinking from a short-term and a long-term. So short-term, I think we're in pretty good shape. We're going to have a good summer driving season. Winter gas then is going to kick in, which is cheaper. So that's going to keep prices, you know, somewhat stabilized, because margins will go up because they won't lower what they normally do. And they'll just take it on the margin side. And that's good. So they won't have the same incentive to raise prices. So we'll see. But I think by the end of the year, again, this is barring any geopolitical event or, any kind of surge in demand event. China could change this dramatically. China was the number one exporter of gasoline. They don't even have any oil, and they were the number one exporter of gasoline because they were importing, they're the number one importer of gas, of crude oil. And their refining capacity is pretty significant. But China's industrial output, which if you look at copper, looks like it's not going to be very good this year. And, you know, remember, you know, I say this all the time, it's communist China, so we don't really have a handle on it. We're just looking at numbers in and around the reality of it, things like copper, things like other ore, coal, oil exports in general. And it doesn't look like they're going to have some sort of industrial surge. I think any industrial surge is going to come from America. So I think stocks, oil stocks, are going to be pretty stable. I feel really good about oil stocks. And for the first time in 6 years, I'm starting to feel very good about nat gas stocks. I have been saying, and it looks like I've been wrong, I hope, but I've been saying that I think we're 2 years away from seeing nat gas start to get rid of some of their supply. And it looks like this whole process of liquefied natural gas is picking up an enormous amount of momentum because of President Trump. And I wouldn't be surprised if our nat gas exports to Eastern Europe gets stronger and stronger in dramatic way. So for the first time in a long time, I'm getting optimistic about some nat gas stocks. So I think all in all, energy stocks are going to be good. I wouldn't want to be too overweighted in energy stocks by any stretch, but I think that we're going to have a good short term and should have a very good long term.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. I appreciate your partnership. Yes.
Hey, Dan.
Good morning.
Hey, this is Brian. Yeah, this is Brian in East Texas. I got
question
on bonds. On the company I work for, the 401k, I do have a kind of position because I'm 55, about 10 years to work. And on my diversity, I have large cap, small cap, and large and growth. But also, there's one that's the PIMCO bonds, and I've got about 17% in that, and it's not doing real good. Would you recommend swapping out of that and diversifying in the other categories?
Yeah, I would, Brian. I think that I'm not feeling good about any bond fund. PIMCO bond fund at one time was one of my largest positions in my institutional money I manage up until about 4 years ago, 5 years ago maybe. Used to like their bond management style. But regardless of that, I don't like any bonds right now, bond mutual funds. And I would be afraid if I were you that your overall value in that bond portfolio could get worse just before you're ready to retire. And I would feel better about preserving some of your principal and some other things.
Okay. I appreciate it, Dan.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Hey, Dan. This is Mike from Alabama. I have two questions for you.
All right, Mike.
We're just starting our Roth IRAs. I signed up for Fidelity. My wife and I, my wife's 28, I'm 32. I plan on using her account for Timothy funds and just do the mutual funds with her. Me, I'm a little more risky, so I'm going to follow you and do your stock picks. And what I plan on doing is investing $1,000 a month for each account up until December and then do $500. That way we can get the full $5,500 in. My question for you is now a good time to go ahead and start getting in? And the second question is, should I split my buys to $500 or keep it at $1,000? That way I can get either 5 stocks a year or 10 stocks a year, and then I'll just going to use the extra $500 for something that's down.
So do you mean you're going to still put $1,000 in, but then split that $1,000 between two stocks? Is that what you mean? Or just put – okay.
Or just $1,000 towards one stock?
No. I would split it. I would definitely split it.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that better. I mean, so you're still over the course of the next – between now and December, and I would start now – between now and December, you know, you're buying, you know, you're buying in, and your dollar cost averaging, and then you're reducing your risk by reducing the position in which you buy every month. And I think that makes more sense. I would do it. I like that better.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Dan. God bless you, and thank you for your ministry.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it.
Hello, Dan.
Yes.
Good morning. This is Betty from Oregon, and it's been a long time since I've talked to you, and I just want to thank you up front for all the help that you're giving all of us believers.
Thank you
for your service. I have several questions, if I could, please. I have probably about a third of my total investment in the Timothy Fund plans. And I'm wondering if I should reconfigure some of that. So it's over about 116K that I have invested in that, and I'm shifting it from a 403B into my Fidelity account, so it's all under one umbrella. And I'm wondering if I should rearrange that or sell some of that off. And then I also had two other stocks I had a question about.
Yeah, no, I would keep doing. Are you contributing to that, or are you just dividing your transfer?
I'm just going to transfer it all, and I think if I contribute, I'll contribute outside of the 403B because I was feed to death by the administrator of that, and I'm tired of paying all those fees.
So
my thought was I could just contribute, you know, on my own through Fidelity to those, you know, Timothy plan ones. But I've got, like I said, over 116K in it already, and it's large blend, mid-cap growth, market money, or excuse me, money market, Timothy plan emerging, then the Israel common, and the fixed income.
Boy, no, I wouldn't change it. Not if that's only, and not, I don't really think about the amount of money. I think more about the percentage. So if you have 33% in Timothy and divide it up like that, I wouldn't change anything, Betsy, to be honest with you.
Okay, so leave those. Should I give you the allocation that I have in each of those?
Sure. Well, yep. Did you get it from me or my list?
Yeah.
Yeah. How old are you?
I'll be 64 in August.
Yeah,
I'm due to work another 2 to maybe 3 years.
I mean, you can give it to me. I think I have a good feel for what it is, though, based on what you just told me.
Yeah. Okay. I have the large let's see, large mid cap 15%, a little over 15%, and then the the mid cap growth A is 16%. Money market is almost 25%. The emerging market 14%. The Israel is 10%, and the fixed income A is 19%.
The only thing I would say is the emerging market is too much.
Okay.
So I would drop that down to 7.
Okay, 7.
And I would
okay.
drop the Israel fund down to 7 as well.
Oh, 7. Okay. All right. So I'll sell off some of those. And then I'll just put that in the money market, or I'll look for your list of what else to purchase?
No, I would put it in the do you have the large mid-cap value fund?
Yes. Yeah. Large mid-cap value A. Uh-huh. I have 15% there.
I would put it in there.
Okay. So put in here. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Then I had another question, please.
Okay.
My KMI and my VSTO, Kinder Morgan and Vista, are really down. Now, I may have bought them at the wrong time. I don't know what I did, but I'm really down. Like the KMI is down 39% and the VSTO is down 67%. I mean, I'm in this the long term. I just keep holding on. I don't want to sell to lose to realize the loss. But
Right.
These guys are coming back, I hope, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't sell those. I mean, I wouldn't sell them. I'd leave them go. KMI is fine. They're probably KMI is probably stronger now. They've been around a long time, so but I would say, in my opinion, they're probably as strong as they've ever been from a company financial perspective. KMI is a buy for sure right now, and they're very they've just had a really good run. From a valuation standpoint, they've got some room. They definitely got room to run from a valuation standpoint. So I don't know. I feel really good. I feel really good about it. I would keep it. That's one of those companies that, you know, you just keep. You never, you know, it does pay a decent dividend. It's okay. You know, so all the technical things that I like to see in companies are very, you know, they're pretty strong and they're doing everything right in that regard. So I would keep them. I think their long-term outlook is great. Vista is a whole nother story. I would keep it. It's not a sell. If it's a sell, it'll be showing up as a sell. You'll see it.
Okay.
It is a stock that I'm looking at very, very closely. I managed to get a peak before it has. Well, I probably shouldn't even say that. Anyway, let me just leave it at this. I think their second quarter earnings, report is giving me some things to be excited about.
Okay.
And I think it's given me some things that, are going to be some headwinds for the company. I like what they just did. They just sold off a fairly big segment of what they do to a UK company. The reason I like it is it generated about $3 billion for them, and it was a really good sale. There is talk that they're going to sell some of their firearms ammunition companies, and then there's other talk saying they're not. I think that would be a mistake if they do that. I hope they don't. But if it's looking like they are going to go through with that, they will likely go through with it before the end of the year. And if it looks like that is going to happen for sure, I may issue a sell. And when I issue a sell on that stock, I'm probably going to give you a buy at the same time to move that money into.
Okay, but that'll be like an alert, right? It won't be just like on the radio.
Yes, you won't
miss it. Like an email alert, okay.
Yes, it'll be an email alert. Yes, you won't miss it.
Okay. Okay, all right. Well, thank you so much, and God bless you and your family, and may God continue to richly bless you and keep you strong so you can continue to help us. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Betsy. I appreciate it. God bless.
Okay, all right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let me...
Hello, Dan?
Yes.
Hey, this is Kent from Arkansas, and I talked to you several months ago about Energy Transfer Partners.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know you have it on your buy list, and I noticed that, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. But the question I have is, if and when ETP merges with the grandfather company, ETE, when that happens,
yes.
Is there going to be tax consequences on the ETP for them, merging with ETE?
No.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Well, I'm sorry. Tax consequence on them?
On ETP.
On
ETP, merging
yes.
With.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. That's what I was wondering. I mean, it's... because chances are they could, there could possibly be a 26% rate decrease in their dividend, possibly, by merging with them. So I was just kind of wondering if there could possibly be that tax consequence when that does happen, perhaps maybe in 19 when they do, if they do merge. I'm kind of hearing that could possibly take place. And I've been a long-term holder of ETP and plan on even holding it after the merger for, several years,
Yeah, I think it's probably not as sure a thing as it was, but likely to happen. They are raising, ETP is raising some money. You may have seen that they're going to issue a preferred. And it's not a preferred that'll probably end up on my list because it's got some things going to be attached to it that I'm not going to probably like unless they change that. But that's paying 7.6%. Their common shares right now is paying 11.7. But the idea is, on buying the preferred, would be that the merger does go through and the dividend gets cut and be reduced. But I don't care about any of that as much as I do that they are issuing the preferred, meaning they have found it necessary to try to raise some money. And they're a company that's a negative cash flow company, free cash flow. It's negative, and it's been negative since, it's been negative a long time. I don't know if it's been 5 years, but I believe it has been, their free cash flow. So they've got some debt, so they're creating a little bit more debt by issuing this preferred. They better get this merger through.
And that's one of the reasons I'm excited long term for the company, because like you say, the exports in Eastern Europe and some of this LNG that is it's exciting to see what's going on there, because I think long term, like I said, I'm a long term holder of this stock.
Yeah.
And I think, like I said, you having it on your buy list too. I've had it about almost 3 years, and even with the other company, ETE they kept the ETP symbol, but with Sunoco back in, I don't know, a year ago when all that.
Oh yeah, right. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
But I just wanted to see what, like I said, the tax consequences of the merger for ETP stockholders.
Yes.
And. Yeah. But anyway, Dan, I appreciate all you do there, and you're a great guy, and we really thank you for all you do, buddy.
Thank you, Kent. I appreciate it.
Okay.
God bless.
Take care. You too.
Yep.
Hello, Dan.
Yes.
This is Tony Sheffield from Mobile, Alabama. Very quick question.
Sure,
I was
Tony.
Able to retire early at 59.
Okay.
And my question I had was on the on setting up the investment percentages. Do I set up for ages 65 into retirement? Because I'm looking at a 30-year horizon for my money.
No. I would look at the 55 to 65. Yep.
All right.
Yeah, I would stick with that. How are you going to be drawing upon this money before you're 65?
Yes. What I was thinking about doing was setting it up in two groups. I've got over $1 million, and I was going to have one group for allocations for the next 10 years, and then with the rest of the money, move that into a longer term thought process to get me for that next 20 years.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think that's good. That's a good plan.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's fine. Yep.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Tony. Thank you. I'm glad.
Okay.
Glad you got through here. Thank you.
Dan?
Yes.
This is Dana, and I had a quick question. You talk about keeping your money, checking whatever, at credit union versus bank.
Uh-huh.
Can you explain why you do that?
Well, I have nothing against banks. I just like credit unions because they're nonprofits. They operate in a little bit of a different world from even a regulatory burden standpoint than do banks. Credit unions tend to be biblically responsible. They tend to have a much greater feel and obligation for their members, as banks, you know, obviously don't have members. Most credit unions are basically member owned, so they get to pass along some of the savings by way of CDs and other things. It's not a great deal, but nonetheless, a little bit more to their depositors than banks do. There's some of the main reasons. I like regional banks. There's a lot of smaller regional banks. I even have a couple on my broad list under financials for the first time in 40 years. I like some banks. It's really more though about what, you know, the differences from a regulatory system with credit unions than it is a bank. I owned a trust company for 22 years that I started. And so a trust company falls under the regulatory burden and the regulation, rules and regulations of a bank. It's basically a bank. As a matter of fact, I sold it to a bank in 1997. So I'm probably a little bit more familiar with bank regulations, a little bit more than I wish I was. But even that has changed dramatically. I mean, I sold in 1997, and trust me, when I sold it, I had no desire to follow it and keep up on the regulatory stuff. So I know that it's changed dramatically. Some of it's gotten worse, some of it's gotten better. But I do like the operations and the way that way credit unions are able to operate. So, but that's, you know, it's the main reason. I like the regional banks. I mean, we've got to all do banking somewhere, and I don't have anything in particular against the regional banks. I have a problem with big banks, the large banks. I do have problems with the large banks, not for any reason, but they're, in my opinion, they're allowed to do some things they shouldn't be able to do. And I feel reasonably certain that if we ever were to go into another depression, not a recession, but a depression, it'll be bank-driven. you know, and it'll be unavoidable. So that's no fault. I don't know. Maybe it is. I don't know that it's any fault of the banks in and of themselves. You know, they're business people. They will do what they can get away with, and I don't mean get away with in an unethical way. I mean get away with from a regulatory standpoint. And I think over the last 15 years, 20 years, they've lost sight of a number of general practices that they should be adhering to, in my opinion, where credit unions tend to, out of a different set of necessities, adhere to good, solid, general banking principles more so than banks do.
Okay. And you would feel comfortable with some business accounts at credit unions that we might...
I would. I've had my business accounts with credit unions, the various
okay.
credit unions. So,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, I would feel very, very comfortable with that. I have a small account business-wise, the ministry,
mm-hmm.
locally, because it just, yeah, kind of have to
right.
for a couple of reasons. But the majority of it, the majority of what we do is with credit unions.
Okay. Okay. Well, great. That's what I was wondering about.
Good.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for all you do for us. I
oh,
appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Hi, Dan.
Yes.
This is Sally in Texas.
Hi, Sally.
And I have a quick question for you. I'm 60 years old. I have 10% of my portfolio in Exxon stock that I've had for decades. And I'm, you know, it's, as you know, it's, I mean, it hasn't done well at all. It's been flat for the last several years.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, should I go ahead and sell it? I mean, I'm sure you saw the article. I don't know if it's in the Wall Street Journal, but anyway, Exxon's not the company it used to be. And it's, you know, I don't think Rex Tillerson was the best CEO they had either. So now I've got this stock, and I'm thinking maybe I should sell it now, pay the capital gains, and put it somewhere else.
Yeah, is the capital gains significant?
Yes, that's
mm-hmm.
the trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just an investment account, I suspect, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, years ago, I worked for Exxon, so I started purchasing stock back in the 80s.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Yeah.
So and you've been through a couple splits, even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I should have sold it a long time ago, and I wish I had.
Yeah.
But
well,
I'm 6 years old. I've got 10% of my portfolio in that Exxon stock.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think I should do?
I think you ought to sell it.
Okay.
I mean, I hate to tell anybody to pay 15% on their
yeah.
capital gains, but I suspect that, you know, your gain, well, obviously your gain is significant.
Yeah.
And so what you get to keep out of that is very significant. And
mm-hmm.
I think unless the only way that I would keep it at this point would be if you had a large estate that your heirs were going to receive, and
mm-hmm.
it was part of that, then you wouldn't care about capital gains.
Right.
But aside from that, yeah, I think you'd be doing the right thing by selling it.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you, Dan.
You're welcome. I'm glad you called,
I'll
Sally. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you. All right, bye.
Hello.
Yes.
This is Jeff from Kansas.
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah, I've got some Invesco funds. I've heard you talk about are not biblically responsible.
They are not, yes.
I was wondering what Timothy funds I should move them into.
What are you in now in Invesco, do you know?
Corporate bond.
Okay.
equity income, diversified dividend, and American value.
So how old are you, Jeff? When are you going to need this money?
I'm 56.
Okay.
When? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I would move it. I would look at Timothy's value fund, their large mid-cap value fund, and I would put the majority of it in there. The corporate bond money that you have, I put in their fixed income fund. It's going to be a little bit more conservative, but a lot more safer because it's government treasuries. So I would put it there. The only other thing that I would suggest is maybe somewhere in there, 10% of whatever it is you have there, maybe going into the large mid-cap value fund, maybe 20%. I'll say 20%. That'll give you a nice split, which will between the value and the growth fund, that will give you some similar diversification to what you have now, and that would be good. So, you know, I think that those things for starters, you can add to or go away from the fixed income. I don't think it would be a bad idea to have 5% in the small cap fund and 5% in the Israel fund. So I think that would make good sense as well.
Okay.
But I think if you divide up between the value fund and the growth fund, the large cap, I think that would be good.
Okay. Repeat that again. Fixed income, large, mid cap.
Yeah. So what percentage do you have in the corporate bond fund?
You know, I couldn't tell you.
Okay. All right. Well, so whatever money that is, I would put it in the fixed income fund.
Right.
So and then you have three other funds, right?
Equity income, diversified dividend, and American value.
So I would put all that except for 10%, you know, except for a small percentage, which would equal about 10% of your overall amount of money that you have. So I would take the overall amount of money, say it's $100,000. I would put $10,000 of that between the Israel fund and the small cap fund.
Okay.
The rest of it I would split evenly between the large cap value and the large cap growth.
Okay. And I had another question about potash merged with the company Nutrien.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. The keeper.
Yep. Yes, definitely. Definitely want to keep it. It's not going to be setting the world on fire anytime soon, but I would definitely keep it.
Okay. I've heard you talk about dollar cost average. What is that to do? What is that about?
Dollar cost average is when you are going into a position like those ones at Timothy that we just mentioned. And instead of putting, let's say you're going to put $100,000 in there or $10,000, whatever it is, and you're going to, instead of putting all $10,000 in, you put it in over, you know, 5 months. So that way you're buying in at all different share prices, and statistically that will likely mean that your share price will be lower than it would have been if you bought in with the whole amount of money at one time. So
okay.
you're spreading out your deposits into those funds over a period of time.
Okay. I had another question. I was wondering if it'd be possible to put a date on your buys and sells, so you know what's been there a while, what's new.
Yeah, I'm not saying it would be impossible, but I don't date those buys and sells for specific reasons, which is I did it one time. And what happened before was that too many people saw it off the list as of a week ago and bought it, or even as of a month ago. And I had somebody, really get hurt because they put $122,000, I remember like it was yesterday, $122,000 in a stock that he thought was good because it was on my buy list this year. In that particular year, this goes back to a few years, and because he looked at the date. And so I've had so many situations like that. It's not that I don't trust people. It's just that I don't trust people. They don't. They just don't, I try not to give folks too many things to begin to do kind of guessing or analytics on their own, because it usually doesn't work out. I'm not saying it would always work out like that. It wouldn't. But it's just something that I've stopped doing and would rather not show it that way. It would be, in most cases, it would be a benefit to me or to the ministry, because it would show. I was looking at two stocks this morning that hadn't been on my buy list for 2 years, and they were actively on my buy list 2 years ago. And I looked at them, I thought, man, anybody that bought those 2 years ago has got to love me, you know. So, I could use that as marketing, I guess, if I wanted to do that. But it's just a little bit too risky. New partners come in. They don't understand. I still have people every day that buy off the broad list for a stock that probably wouldn't get on my buy list for years, and they buy it. And so many people, I had somebody call me last week that was hurt doing that, you know. And I don't have an answer for them. I don't know what to tell them. All I can say is, look, sometimes you buy stuff off the buy list and it tanks. So you can't buy anything off the broad list. I don't know what the deal is, but rather than try to figure out what people might do, I just assume the worst. So that's why I don't have that. So
yeah,
I apologize for that, but it's I know, obviously, on my side, I have a very extensive behind the scenes kind of page for all that stuff that I choose when I choose buys. And I know not only when it was put on last and when it was taken off last, but how much both times. And I put about five different other factors in there at the time. But it's a breakdown that I'd rather not put on.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
You're
Have
welcome.
A great day.
Yep. Thank you. See, we'll take a few more here. I don't know how many people are even still with us. It looks like a whole lot. Holy mackerel.
Hi, Dan.
Hi.
This is Sally in Louisiana, not Texas.
Hi, Sally. Well, I thought Sally was calling back again. Okay.
Yeah, all right. I'm on the income portfolio.
Uh-huh.
And I made one of those mistakes like you were just talking about. I bought SCG. And I need some more of my utilities. So I was thinking about selling that one. Plus, I have IDV, which is an exchange-traded fund, international dividend, large value, 70% in Europe and 32% is in financials. So should I sell that? The yield,
yes,
though, is 4.82%. So
when do you get the yield?
Four times a year?
I think
it's every quarter. I can't remember.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I would sell it. I mean,
I'd have to look at the date. You mean you want me to keep it until the next time comes up, or if I just got it or whatever?
No, I would just, I mean, if you're 3 weeks away from a dividend being paid,
yeah,
then keep it. If not, I wouldn't worry about it too much, and I would move in. You can get a preferred probably for 5%.
I have five preferreds, but I do need more in my preferreds and my utilities. But I only have the four utilities, so I was working on those first. Which do you think I ought to do? Because I was thinking about selling the ID, the exchange-traded fund, and SPG, and buying CNT.
Yeah, I would do that.
Okay.
Yeah, I would do
that. If I bought a preferred, which one do you think is a good buy? Because I thought the prices were kind of up on them right now. I don't know. That may just be me. I don't know.
I don't think so. There was one that was over par value on Monday. I took it off the list, though.
You the ones I have. I have DRUA, DTJ, PSA, PRC, EAI, and PSA, PRD.
You have one PSA, did you say?
No, I have two of them. The one that ends in C and the ones that are D.
Yeah. I would probably, if I were going to pick a preferred to add to, then I would probably look at, I mean, you've got, I don't know, I would look at, yeah, I'm thinking of E&O. But,
yes, I have that one. I thought about that one. I even thought about the Tennessee one, too.
Yeah, the Tennessee one I really like. It is probably never going to get called, but it only pays 3.7%.
Yeah.
So it depends on where you are with the income. EAI?
Yes.
You do? Okay.
I've got five of them, so that pretty much, you know.
Yeah, that's almost all.
Well, the only other thing I could do is increase my shares in those.
Yeah,
that
that's what I would do. I would increase your shares.
Which one first?
Yeah,
I have
probably
about 200 in each one of those. The PRD is my lowest shares. I only have 125 shares in that one. The rest of them have almost about 200 each.
Yeah, I would buy. I'd probably increase the. I'm looking at the dates. Either the DRUA or the DTJ. You own both of those?
Yes.
Yeah, I would probably increase both of those a little bit.
Okay. And then I could still sell something else and buy the CMP for another utility or not?
Yeah, I think that's fine.
I don't have enough of my utilities either, you know?
Yeah, I think that's fine. I think that'd be fine.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah. Good.
Okay, well, I appreciate it, all your ministry, because right now I got just the dividends and what I'm changed my investing to your stocks is like $4,600, and I'm still changing some of my other stuff. So, and plus,
good,
I'm not paying someone $2,500 a year to manage.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I really appreciate your ministry.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm glad. I'm glad it's working out for you, Sally.
It is. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
So thank you very much.
Yep. You're welcome. God bless.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, great stuff, folks. You know, as we continue to see that over and over again, we hear the same stories, but it's really exciting. Yes.
Hey, Dan. This is Claude from Louisiana.
Hey, Colin.
Hey, you mentioned on the last conference call that you were going to try to get together with Caesarstone on a call.
Oh, yeah. I did. Yeah, I did get together with him. Oh, wow. Geez, I'm glad you mentioned
that. Are you feeling any better about him?
I'm feeling a little bit better about them. They promised me that they were going to give me their management letters. I don't want to get too deep into the weeds, but they're so when a company does an audit, there is a letter, an opinion letter from the auditors that goes with their audit, and it's for internal use to the executives in the company. And it basically says things like, you know, your audit looks great, you did a good job, you know, so the numbers are good, but, and it's filled with all these buts that, you know, we're concerned about this and we're concerned about that, and we would really like to see before the next audit, you know, this being done. It's not necessarily bad, but there is something that I've asked them for, and they promised they'd get it to me. And then when they promised they'd get it to me, I then told them I'd like the last three. So they didn't appreciate that much. But, I said, you know, in order for me to do it, I need to look at that. So that's that question. They questioned me and said, why do you want that? And tell us what you're thinking. So I told them what we were thinking. I said, I'm concerned. I'm concerned whether you're going to be sovereign. You know, I haven't been over there in a year. They knew where I was because I've been to their kibbutz and I've been through their plant. And, it was what I suspected. They blamed Savannah, Georgia, their distribution center on there. But they signed some really good contracts. Smoothie King, Kentucky Fried Chicken, a couple others that they're going to supply some of their international, all their international stuff.
Yeah.
So I know one thing, their expenses are cheap. They've got free cash flow. They have very little debt. They had no debt, so they purchased this property in Georgia. So they have very little debt. And basically, I only have one concern, and I told him this. I said, my biggest concern is, can you hang in there until the economy turns around here? Because I have no doubts when we get commercial construction and residential construction really on a roll that, you know, you guys are going to do good. They mm-hmm. did have a problem with Lowe's. Lowe's had agreed to carry it and then stopped. So that was their first big break, they thought, in getting into the retail kind of do-it-yourselfer market, but that didn't work out. So they're revamping that and they're relooking at all that. So, you know, I feel better. I still have some unanswered questions that I'm sure I'm going to get in the next week or so when I get their letters and I see the second quarter numbers. So
yeah.
I have a friend of mine who's an analyst in Jerusalem. And I did talk to him as well. He's a venture capitalist guy, but a venture capital firm, but does a lot of analytics. And I got his opinion on it too, and I felt pretty good about it. So we'll see. I don't have a sell. I didn't sell it yet. So
there's some good news on that regard. I mean, in regard to Israeli investments in business, a lot of countries are now passing laws against having contracts or I guess not having contracts for against Israel, in other words, practicing. In fact, Louisiana we just passed that in our legislature and said that every state contract would be examined to see if companies were boycotting Israel. And
yeah.
If they were, they would lose their state contracts.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the BDS movement, this whole movement called BDS, which was the goal there was, just to give you an idea, Israel, their largest export, if you didn't know, is produce. And they, because of BDS, they had to send all their produce to Greece, and Greece repackaged it so it wouldn't look like it's come from Israel, and then distributed through the Eurozone. Yeah, they had to actually repackage it. So they're starting to get rid of that. The European nations being a little bit slower to get rid of it. So that is good news. It is good news. And I suspect that the movement to abolish that BDS, that whole BDS thing has done a good job. They spent a lot of money, and it looks like we're making some headway. So, yeah.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
That's good. Yeah. Well, thanks. I appreciate it, Claude. Good stuff.
Appreciate it.
All right. Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Bye.
Yes.
Yes, Dan?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Ed from Michigan. I have kind of like two questions. One is I just have a question on Pattern Energy Group Incorporated, and it's a utility company, how that looks for the future, you think? Because I haven't seen it on a buy list for a while. So.
Yeah, which one was it? I'm sorry.
It's a PEGI, a utility.
Oh, Pattern.
Yes, Pattern,
yeah,
Pattern Energy Group.
Yep. So you just want to know how it looks for the future? I'll just say this. The valuation of it looks very good.
Good.
They're paying a good dividend. Their financials have been really weak.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been a concern of mine. So I'm watching that very closely. They have been, as far as, their net income has been fine. Their income has been good. And their operating income, their revenue has been strong as well. So, I think they're going to be fine. They're getting a lot of bad press. There are a number of organizations. Some have listed it as a sell, some an underperform. They were downgraded. So they're going through some struggles, but certainly I'm not ready to put them back on my buy list yet. Their valuation is good, but I'm getting closer. I'm getting closer.
Okay. And just one other quick question. The other one is, will you be adding any more preferreds down the road?
I'll tell you, I think it's going to be rough. What's happening is I thought there was going to be a surge about 5 months ago. I thought we'd see a little bit of a surge in preferreds because the commercial banks were struggling with their optimism of the economy and they weren't lending. And so the other way they get money is obviously issue preferreds. That's turned around when we saw the regulation change that happened about 3 months ago. And now because of that regulation change that the banking system, I'll say, is not as reluctant to lend to these big companies. So that's hurt preferreds. So they're not as incentivized to issue preferreds. Now, the other thing that could change that is what happened yesterday. And what happened yesterday was Powell, Federal Reserve Chair Powell, said that he wants to see a couple of things. And one of them was he believes that they are going to be on course for raising interest rates every quarter by something. So that might incentivize companies to issue preferreds now based on the current rates knowing that the commercial lending rate is going to be going up every 6 months, if that's true. Now, I can't imagine that happening every 6 months for, I mean, every 3 months, I'm sorry, for a long period of time. But that might spook them into changing their mind and leaving the commercial lending and get back into preferreds a little bit, where they can lock in a rate, where in commercial lending, it's most of it's floating, and they're not able to do that. So we'll have to see. I mean, I was hopeful when I heard that, but I'm not going to know if that's going to pan out for another 3 or 4 weeks or longer.
Okay. Okay.
So
okay,
I hope so.
You.
I hope
okay.
so.
Well, thank you very much, and God bless you for all the stuff you do for us, okay?
You're welcome. Thank you. Listen,
bye-bye.
Folks, I want to remind you all, too, if you are a preferred person, if you're looking for preferreds, please don't get lured into some of the new preferreds coming out that are paying very high interest rates. Just be careful, because some of those are so risky. You know, they have a lot of junk in them. So I want you to be very careful about doing anything like that. Just stick to my list. Let me go to... I'm going to take two more, this one and one more. Go ahead.
Hey, Dan, this is Jeff, Mississippi. How are you?
Good, Jeff.
Thanks a lot for all that you do. I was wanting
sure.
to ask about NCR, what you think on it. I've had it for a good while. It really just never seemed to do much, and then I got another question after that.
Yeah, so NCR, you know, is a one of their biggest issues is going to be trade. Let me first of all tell you, I like them. They are incredibly valued really well, but they're in a very competitive business because they do a lot of hardware, special kind of cables and different things for the technology industry. And if they get to a place where they begin to lose suppliers now in China, which frankly, for the last 6 months, long before the trade tariffs and all that stuff started, they were starting to lose some ground there. That could hurt their their ability to be competitive. And so that's a little bit of a concern, but I would still say from my viewpoint, they would be considered an outperform from here. I think that it is likely that, you know, they are going to get better. I kind of believe they're going to be positive by the end of the year as a stock. I don't know where they are right now, but I know it's negative, maybe 5% on the year or something in that neighborhood. I think they're going to finish in positive territory by the end of the year because of some other things that they're working on. I think they're going to come to be. So it's been a kind of a dog for a while, but, you know, if you own it and you've suffered through for the last couple of years, I'd keep it. I wouldn't be selling it.
Okay. And then my last question is, and I know this is probably different on individual stocks and stuff, but can you tell us maybe what needs to be going through our minds when, say like last week, you put something on the buy list, and then this week it falls off, even if that stock may have gone down in price? Is there just a technical thing that caused you to do that, or... how should we be viewing that?
Yeah, no, not you should be viewing that on a technical basis, or basically what happened or and what happens in cases like that. It's usually a situation where it's always one of two reasons. I'll tell you which reason this one was, but it's either one or two reasons. Either I put it on the list, and I got news, or I'll say I got a feeling based on some things that I've seen, that it's going to take it's gonna drop for some technical reasons, and I'll pull it off a list so I can put it back on at a later date. That would be one reason why that would happen if it happens in a very short period of time. Obviously, it happens if a stock jumps up real quick. I'll take it off the list in a week or even a couple of days. I've done that. So that could happen. The other reason is that I put it on the list, very strong company, and you know I feel good about it as a buy. And for instance, something happens where a merger or a buy opportunity appears in that particular stock, and it drops dramatically. And I'll take it off to see how it shakes out. That's what happened here. And generally what happens, two things, if they're the buyer, it'll drop because they're spending their cash flow. And people like me get concerned because they're not going to have operating costs. They don't have any free cash flow. And that's a problem, or it's just a knee-jerk reaction because they know, like I know, it's probably going to drop down lower, and they're going to have a better opportunity to buy it and pick up some grams. So that's a stock that could show right back up on my buy list. Only twice in the last 20 years that I can remember, it was only twice. And it was in 2009, and it was almost back-to-back that I do that. It was two real estate investment trusts. I put them on the list, took them off a week later, and I sent out an alert because both cases, it was a situation where an accounting impropriety was found, and they fell under investigation. And I took them both off the list. And they've never been on the list since. As a matter of fact, one of them I dropped off my broad list altogether. So, but generally, if it's something like that, I took those two off my list, put a sell order in, and sent an alert and told everybody to sell it. And that was the first time, maybe ever, but I hadn't done that in a very long time. So nothing to be alarmed about. A lot of times I put something on my list, and the next day they'll make an announcement that they missed earnings reports, or they decided to cut their earnings, and you know that'll drop the stock, and I don't really care about that.
One of the ones I was thinking about was just, I think it was this last week, was Cracker Barrel.
Yeah.
I've got more insight on it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was Cracker Barrel was one of those situations where it came out as a buy or a sell. In this case, it was a sell of a number of their outlets. And which means because the real estate is where all their value is, their valuation was going to cut. Now, as a matter of fact, it's not going to, doesn't look like it's going to happen now. So it'll probably come back up. But that just spooked everybody. It didn't really spook me. I was just, the first thing I always think of, not the valuation, but I think that, are they doing it because they're in trouble, or are they getting rid of their dogs, the ones that just aren't doing well? And Cracker Barrel, knowing their management, they were getting rid of their dogs, and they just weren't worried about it. But they're having a change of heart of that. Probably their board got on. But yeah, yep. But nothing to be alarmed about. I like Cracker Barrel. Cracker Barrel is one of those great, one of the rare restaurants, casual dining places, very rare, that they're very, very consistently, they're managed very, very well. They're kind of like Chick-fil-A in the sense that the vast majority of them are company owned. So there's a consistency. They do very well. Their consistent growth since they've gone public has always been very, very good. They're just, you know, just a stock that plugs along, does great. So if you own it, I've owned Cracker Barrel for I don't know how many years since they went public. I've owned it, and it's I can't. I don't know if I've had a time period of any length of time that I wasn't making money off it. So it's a good company to own.
All right. Well, thank you, Dan. I appreciate everything you do. You give us peace of mind, and that goes a long way.
That's great. That's good to hear, Jeff. And it does go a long way. I talked about that today. You're right, brother, because somebody called and said during February they panicked and sold out everything. And all I could think about was all my partners that I hopefully gave some peace of mind, and that hung in there. So good stuff, man. Thank you, brother. Last call. Who's it going to be?
Good afternoon, Dan.
Yes.
This is Bill from Texarkana.
Hey, Bill.
How are you doing this morning?
Good.
I've got an industrial stock, Harsco, and I noticed it's not on your buy list anymore. And I don't have a whole lot of shares, but it's up. And I was wondering if it'd be all right to continue to add to it or...
Yeah, it would be okay. If you already own it, it's okay. I don't know. So how long have you had it? What did you buy it at?
I bought it on Robin Hood. I used to have Robin Hood.
No. What price was it? Do you remember?
Oh, it was at around $17, $18
yeah.
a share.
Man,
it's
I
up.
Hate
it's
to,
up like $23, I think, over $23
yeah.
a share now.
Yeah. I hate to see anybody dollar cost average up. You know what I mean? Like raise
right.
the average share price. No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't buy it here. I would just leave it go. I know it's a good company. I like what they do. But I would, I mean, the one thing about this company is that it's going to stay volatile.
Right.
There's going to be dips. I don't want to ask you to plant yourself in front of your account all the time, but one of the things you could do is just watch it and see if mm-hmm. See if it does drop. Chances are if it drops anywhere down towards 18, 19, it could end up back on my list again. But right. just watch it and, try to buy into it when it takes the dips. This is one of those companies okay. that hopefully is going to continue to grow in size.
Right.
And it really, I would love to see some more growth in it. It's not, you know, they're just, they struggle to grow. It is a local, it would be considered a local company for me. I mean, it's out in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I know
yes,
the
sir.
Company, I know the company well. And so, you know, they're just.
Would it be all right to sell that? And I know you got some more on your buy list and buy some of them.
Yeah, it would be all right to sell it, take your profit and buy something on the buy list. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be okay. Definitely.
Okay.
Yep.
That's what I'll do then. I really
okay.
appreciate what you do, Dan. And I seen you over here in Linden when you had your...
Oh, did you? Good.
Yeah. You done real good. I appreciate all you do.
Thank you, Bill.
God bless
that.
You and your family.
Thank you. God bless you, Bill. I appreciate
You're
that.
You're welcome.
Folks, I sure Bye. Appreciate all of you, and I thank you so much for all that you do for the ministry. And I know I say it all the time.